time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Time for Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough is here today with a deeper topic, a little sensitive, and I'm actually really looking forward to this conversation, Gordon, so thank you so much for preparing it. What are we talking about this week?
Well, a week and a half ago, I attended a conference here in Winnipeg that was hosted by the Sioux Valley Dakota Nation and the Indigenous lobby group MKO. It was entitled Protecting Our Ancestors, and it related to the care and control of Indigenous burial sites in Manitoba, along with the associated human remains and artifacts. We heard a lot of thought-provoking discussion during the conference, much of it relevant to non-Indigenous burial sites too. So I'll try to share some of what I heard with our listeners this morning.
And I like that tying together of like current events and history as well. So thank you for this. When we're talking about ancestors, who are we talking about in this context?
Well, my understanding is that the word ancestor, which by the way is capitalized, refers to any part of the body of a deceased Indigenous person. And that person need not be someone to whom you are related. An ancestor may be a member of your community or Indigenous communities generally. By this definition, any Indigenous human remains found anywhere are ancestors, whether they're buried in the ground or stored in a container in a museum or a university.
Oof, can we talk about that, being stored in a container?
Mm-hmm, I know. It's kind of a weird mental picture, isn't
yeah.
it? And I'm afraid this is a rather delicate and controversial topic. At one time, archaeologists in Manitoba undertook excavations of old Indigenous graves in hopes of learning about how the ancient people of Manitoba had lived. They took bones and other items from the graves, and today those items are held in collections around the world. Indigenous people interpret such acts as theft, and they want to see the items repatriated to the communities from which they came, or, in the absence of a concrete link to any present-day community, rematriated to Mother Earth.
What do you mean by rematriated?
Yeah, well, this is a word that I learned at the conference. Rematriation is a counterpart to repatriation that involves not just the return of ancestors and cultural items in accordance with the cultural practices of Indigenous communities. Rematriation entails a deeper transformation in social practices to restore balance in our relationship to the earth and true reconciliation between all the people of Canada.
Now, you said that remains are held in museums and universities. Can you give us some examples?
Well, I can give you a tangible one that is from my own experience. 2 years ago, I was contacted by a student at the University of Manitoba who was working with a professor in the Department of Anthropology. The department holds a large collection of Indigenous remains that it received in the early 1960s from the late Chris Vickers. Vickers is widely regarded as the father of Manitoba archaeology. The university was trying to establish where the remains had been acquired by Vickers during excavations he had made through the 1940s in the vicinity of Rock Lake and Pelican Lake in western Manitoba. Vickers had had aid from the Manitoba Historical Society, so they thought that we might have his files. Well, we didn't, but I was able to refer the student to our old documents that are held at the Provincial Archives.
And what do they find in Vickers' papers?
Well, he had kept detailed notes about his archaeological work, so the university was able to connect the remains with Indigenous communities to which they rightfully belong. The university established a council of Indigenous elders to advise them, and they moved the remains from the anthropology department, where they had been used in classroom teaching for decades, to a specially designed storage facility on campus. Later this spring, the university will hold what they're calling a respectful repatriation ceremony to turn the remains over to Indigenous care. And this is not the only example here in Manitoba. The Manitoba Museum has Indigenous remains in its collections, as do smaller museums around rural Manitoba. And there are remains farther afield, too, such as in the British Museum in the United Kingdom. all these organizations should be making plans, if they haven't already made them, to rematriate Indigenous remains in their possession as part of the reconciliation process. And I have to say, it's not solely human remains that should be rematriated, but funerary objects too. These are objects that were buried along with human remains as part of a death rite or ceremony. An example of funerary objects being removed from Indigenous graves here in Manitoba is the case of Star Mound.
What happened with that case of Star Mound?
Well, it's a remarkable site that we talked about here in Abandoned Manitoba 8 years ago. Star Mound is a 100-foot-high hill about 12 miles south of Larivere, about 4 miles from the U.S. border. It's visible for miles in every direction, and it's a feature known to geologists as a moraine. In other words, it's a pile of debris that was left behind by a glacier as it moved. On top of this particular moraine are at least 4 Indigenous burial mounds that are believed to date back over 1,000 years. In 1909, an archaeologist from the University of Toronto spent several weeks excavating the burial mounds, and further digging between 1912 and 1915 was done by an American archaeologist acting on behalf of the National Museum of Canada. He removed from these mounds such items as arrowheads, bone and stone tools, stone spear points, and pottery shards. These items, placed originally in a grave along with a body, are believed to be in storage in Ottawa. Despite the useful anthropological information that such excavations have provided, many would say that these funerary objects were obtained by grave robbing, and they should be rematriated.
Did they talk at this conference about solutions for some of these problems?
There was a useful presentation by a representative of an American Indigenous organization about U.S. legislation called the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA for short. It was enacted by the U.S. Congress in 1990, and it mandates the protection and return of human remains, along with items from graves and sacred and cultural objects of other kinds, too. One of the U.S. law's limits, though, and I heard this from several people at the conference, is that it applies only to federally controlled lands in the U.S. and agencies that receive federal funding. Back here in Manitoba, MKO envisions enacting something like NAGPRA here in Canada. And Manitoba Senator Mary Jane McCallum has committed to introduce a private member's bill to the Senate to develop what is being called NAGPRA Plus for Canada. In the meantime, MKO calls on the Manitoba and Canadian governments to immediately protect all sites where the remains of Indigenous children are known to be located.
And this, of course, is referring specifically to the sites of former residential schools.
Right. You know, and an example of one such site is the former Brandon Residential School, where there are at least 3 burial sites known to occur. 2 of them occur on the school site itself, and the site is owned by the Sioux Valley Dakota Nation, so there is some Indigenous protection there. However, the 3rd site is close to the Assiniboine River and is presently occupied by a privately owned campground. I'm told the owner of that campground is not particularly cooperative with efforts to protect the grave sites, and the city of Brandon itself may be culpable in the matter because it sold what used to be a public park with knowledge that graves existed there. I suspect that efforts will be made by some level of government to expropriate the land so Indigenous control can be asserted.
Now, earlier you mentioned that the conference was relevant to non-Indigenous burial sites as well. What did you mean?
Back in 2021, we discussed here on Abandoned Manitoba the site of a former Hutterite colony near Rose Isle. That colony closed in 1936, but the graves of 6 people are still at the site. There's no official protection for those graves, and, fortunately, members of another colony are looking after them. But in my view, all graves in Manitoba should be safe from disturbance. So this unofficial cemetery should have the same protection as what we afford to official cemeteries. Well, another example, last summer I visited a small cemetery southeast of Winkler, where I suspect there is also a possibility of future disturbance. In fact, I had to use my drones to visit that cemetery.
Why did you need drones to visit a cemetery?
Well, because the cemetery is way out in an agricultural field and there is no road access. And when there's a crop in the field, you know, you don't just go trample it. So the cemetery, it was established back in 1876 by a Mennonite family who farmed there. Subsequently, the land was sold out of the family and the road to the cemetery was plowed up. Eventually, the farmer may wish to plow right through that old cemetery, so it is literally at risk. And there are dozens of similarly unprotected cemeteries throughout Manitoba, so a law like the NAGPRA that protects all burial sites in Canada, I think, would be valuable. But coming back to the Protecting Our Ancestors conference, you know, I think this is a matter that we'll be hearing more about soon as society works towards reconciliation with Indigenous communities. If anyone is interested in learning more about this topic, I've put together some resources relating to things like Indigenous burial sites in Manitoba, including the archaeological excavation of Indigenous burial mounds. And there's more as well. So look on the Manitoba Historical website at mhs.mb.ca/info/ancestors.
Thanks for this, Gordon. And I'm looking forward to kind of following up on that story that the U of M are doing later on this spring with a respectful repatriation ceremony. I think that's a really important story to follow. So thank you.
You're welcome.
What's up for next week?
Well, we hear a lot these days about technology that is revolutionizing how we interact with the world around us. Virtual reality is one such technology, and next week we're going to examine what we might call Victorian virtual reality. We'll consider a medium that, over 100 years ago, enabled people around the world to see Manitoba in 3D. Now, we can still see that long-ago Manitoba thanks to three men, Duffin, Bingham, and Tom.
Victorian virtual reality. Can't wait, Gordon. Thank you.
See you next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.